Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
Since recording this episode, IBM closed a landmark acquisition deal with Red Hat for $34 billion, and Brian Gracely at the time was head of strategy for Red Hat. And I think you will thoroughly enjoy this conversation. We just hope you forgive us for the slightly poor quality sound, and there was something wrong with our setup on the day. And we have edited it to the best of our abilities in the hope that you will forgive us on this occasion. Thank you.
Still confused, as I think many people are, about the difference between digitalization, one of the topics, and digital transformation. So I think we'll sort of kick off by talking about digitalization first.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, the terms can kind of sometimes get interchanged or get buzzwordy and they get confusing. But I think in the simplest sense, the way that I think about digitization is it's essentially the process of taking something that, let's say it's in the context of business, something that used to be very physical based. So going to a store or something that was location based, hailing a cab or something like that, and figuring out, okay, how do I, number one, make that a digital experience, something that I can interact with, say, over the internet, for example. But more importantly, how do we make it something that can be personalized and we can learn from that process? So let's take a simple example. So if I was in London and I wanted to hail a cab, in the past, the cab sort of had full control over what that experience was. As the end user, the person riding the car, I didn't really know when they were going to show up. I didn't really know what the fare was going to be. They didn't know who I was. There was no sort of loyalty to any cab company specifically. And now what's happened is, because I have essentially the internet in my pocket on your smartphone, and I have a service, so something like Lyft or Uber or any of the other services out there, that process of hailing a cab has now become digitized because I have visibility of where they are. So I have a sense of how long it's going to take. Do I stand out in the rain? Do I not stand in the rain? They know I can look at who the driver is, so I can get a sense of how trustworthy they are. Do I want to deal with them? Have other people thought they were a good driver? But all of that has now become a digitized experience. And so you can begin to wrap a bunch of other things around that experience. Loyalty to a service, an understanding of who the driver is, the location of where the car is. And then that begins the process of, well, okay, what more could happen beyond that? Well, basic things start to happen. It's raining or the traffic is bad and you go, well, I'd like to be able to communicate with that person. Maybe I moved from where I originally started because it was raining, I moved down the street to the next corner. I want to be able to text that person, call that person. And so we've taken something that was very physical and location-based before, we've turned it into something that becomes digitized, i.e. we put the internet between the business and the person. And all these other new interesting services, customizations kind of spring out of that. So to me, that's one example of what digitization might be.
But I mean, aren't all businesses to some extent digitalized these days, or most?
Well, there's really two pieces to it. Yes, every business is trying to become digitized. So whether that means your buying experience moves to something online or digital, whether it's a mobile phone or web application. That's part of it. The other part of it really is, what do you do once you've done that digitization? Because that's really where things sort of decide whether companies are successful or just kind of beginning to play in the game. So let me give you an example of that. So just being able to put something online, been around for more than a decade. Everybody's had a website, everybody's got a mobile app these days. The question becomes two things. Number one, what do you do when you've created that new interaction model with your customers or with your business partners? Right? Is it just a one-time interaction? Right? I just went to the website and I bought something. Or have you begun to understand, how do I learn more about that experience? When did they come? What types of things did they search around for? What did I recommend to them? What do I know about that person that I can enhance about trying to continue to make them a customer? What habits do they have? All those things start to become two-way interactions, or multi-way interactions. We're wrapping a lot of information around the experience and using that experience to make the interaction better. That becomes digitization. Now, that's one part of it. Have we made that digitization rich and able to drive more interactions or drive better experiences? That's one part of it. The second part that's probably much more complicated is the part where you say, okay, I'm the business that's offering that. So let's say I'm a bank, or I'm retail, or I'm something else. When you're having to make that interaction with your customer, with your business partner, more two-way, more based on the data that happens, interactions that happen, now you start to have to say, okay, our internal business processes, and potentially the way we organize our business, is probably going to have to change, because we're no longer just saying, we're taking an action, we planned for it for 9 months, we took an action, and then we're all done. We're essentially saying, the business and the way that we interact with our marketplace or with our partners or with other things that will influence our market is going to be a constantly evolving thing, a constantly changing thing. And because it's software that's now interacting with your customer, as opposed to a person or a physical store, we have the ability to update that software, change that experience, use the data from that experience to continue to improve it and change it. So if your business is internally very static, your organizational charts are very static, the way that you communicate changes with your business is very static, you're going to struggle with the digital transformation part of that. Right? So you may have digitized the front end of your store, for example, but the digital transformation of what do I do beyond that within my company is usually the bigger challenge for a lot of people.
I mean, so digitalization is the blanket topic which should include digital transformation. Ideally, everything needs to be as streamlined as possible,
right,
and it needs to be as easy as possible for the teams to work within that business. So digitalizing it,
right,
is just, you know, using the data, whether it's coming in from, you know, your old customer records, which, you know, you have, and new data that you are assimilating from all over the place. It could be from your Google Analytics, it could be from social media listening tools, it could be from, you know, anything else that you're sort of plugged in. It could be weather data,
right?
You know about IBM and the weather channel or whatever they bought a few years
right
ago, billions of dollars. so then that actually opens up the conversation around, you know, let's look at the data, let's actually analyze, kick it around, and then let's create some new business models, let's create some more better processes, smoother processes, and actually just see if we're missing any opportunities. I mean, that's in essence what we're looking to do, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're really, what happens when you get to a point where what you've done is digitized, right? So your experience is now digital, if you will. It begins to sort of open up a whole lot of possibilities about how you can start to say, okay, how do I not just give a better experience and be more efficient, but because the cost of making changes is so low, right? So let's take a simple physical versus virtual example. So let's say I run a retail store, I run a clothing store. If I'm not sure if red sweaters are going to be more popular this season or blue sweaters are going to be more popular, well, the cost of figuring that out means I'd have to order a whole lot of inventory, I'd have to go to the store, I'd have to put out red ones for a few days, I'd have to figure out if those sell really well. Maybe the next few days I put out blue ones and I figure out if those sell well, but I had to buy the blue inventory. Like, all that can be very expensive, it can be time consuming. And, you know, for all you know, that day was just rainy and miserable weather and nobody was going out to buy anything, right? So you did a bunch of work, maybe you got useful information, maybe you didn't. Online, you can simply say, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to build some pictures of people with red sweaters. I'm going to build some pictures of people with blue sweaters. And for some percentage of the people that come to my website, I'm going to put the blue sweater out as the first thing they see. And I can figure out very quickly, is that drawing attention? Is that collecting people? Are people buying that? Okay, so for the next day, week, whatever, I put the red sweater out there. The cost of doing that, putting out those experiments digitally, is infinitely less, right? It basically costs me nothing to do those experiments. And I can start figuring out, okay, are there correlations between days of the week and colors? Are there correlations between what was on television last night to the most popular TV show that people watched? If people were watching and the person wore a red sweater, should I put that red sweater up there? What's happening on Pinterest or any of the other, like you said, social media sites to figure out how can I start to correlate things or associate things that maybe will help me as well? And so doing it, when you start with digital as your footprint, the ability to then experiment with the business, start to figure out what people would like, becomes much easier, number one, but also becomes incredibly less expensive to do. And so your ability to tweak things for 1%, 5% here and there becomes much more manageable than what you ever did in a physical.
Right. So it enables you to also come up with all sorts of new possibilities in all areas of the business, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So, for example, you might say, well, you know, you might be a clothing store, and you might think, well, okay, so we've got a great website, so how are we going to take this to the next level? I mean, I've been looking at getting some glasses. Yeah, so I'm in the hope of getting glasses, and I had a look at some of the glasses, you know, in a shop. And then I had a look online, and I went to a site which is, you know, you can order your glasses online. So they send you your glasses. And I was just like, I was looking on my mobile, and it says, please install Flash, right? So look at yourself and see these glasses. How am I going to install Flash from my iPhone?
Yeah? Right.
So immediately, that company has basically just lost themselves money.
Right.
What I did do is I went over, I was looking at designer frames. I decided I was going to save money and just buy a cheap pair of reading glasses there from the shop, right? Because of the prescription and everything else. And I didn't want the hassle of everything. But then I sort of just started thinking, and I was just like, okay, so how am I going to go and find, okay, I'm going to look at some manufacturers of designer frames for when I do have some money and buy them. So I think I took a look at, I think it was Police glasses, or, you know, it was one of these time-honored brands. It could have been Carrera, or it wasn't Armani. I think it was Police, or someone like that. And I looked on the site, and it said, try on the glasses. So I was like, okay. So I picked some frames, I stuck my head in front of the camera, I wiggled my head around from left to right, and I got a fitting for my head. They put the glasses on, and I tell you what, it was pretty good, I'm not going to lie.
Right.
But the thing is that surely you as a retailer would want to be there ahead of your manufacturer, or at least the manufacturer would direct the business into your store once you've decided. It's just a bit of a no-brainer, really. And these models can be in all areas, can't they? In all parts of retail. I mean, the future of retail, I personally think it's very exciting, but I think that square footage is going to reduce, and I think it's going to become a lot more interesting. I mean, what's your sort of view?
Well, I think you highlight two really important things, right? The first one is, so take your example of glasses. You know, as things become digital, as you no longer really care, let's say that experience worked out great, but you no longer really care, did I buy them from the retailer or did I buy them directly from the glasses manufacturer? As far as you're concerned, that was a great experience, whoever did that. So this digitization experience is really sort of disrupting business in that people who used to be manufacturers and their business used to be, you know, go to market through retail stores, through sort of secondary people, well, they may no longer need those, right? The value chain may radically change because they can directly go after you. They can advertise on Google, they can you punch glasses into your search and they may show up as opposed to retail. So there's going to create some tension in the value chain, and supply chain between the creators and the people who do retail. And what that's doing is ultimately for people that are in the retail space, meaning things like they own real estate, that have stores and so forth, they're really having to rethink, okay, number one, do I want to maintain the real estate? Is that providing any value? And in some cases, the answer is yes. In other cases, it may not be. It may be shrinking retail. But you know, it comes and goes, right? There's usually some sort of disruption that happens in the markets, and maybe they don't need as much retail space. But then we do begin to see things come back into retail. So we see things like the Apple Store, who said, we're going to spend less time having lots of shelves stocked. We're going to spend more time allowing you to be in the store. There'll be geniuses there. You can learn things in the store. So there's a reason to physically come there, because there are people that still want to shop that way.
Yeah.
Automobiles are bought that way, and other things are bought that way. But yeah, it's really forcing companies to say, okay, number one, can I create great experiences? But number two, is my value chain, my supply chain going to potentially change here or get disrupted here? Where am I in that value chain? And then given certain scenarios that could play out, what do we want to do with the assets that we have? Is real estate and storefront, is that still an asset? We want to rethink what that looks like. Maybe we want to do other things in that real estate, but also move more stuff into digital experience. So it really, there's not one right answer to it. That's the interesting part of it. But it is making people really have to rethink those things about, what does our current business look like? What could our other business look like? Are our partners our competitors? Are our partners our partners? It really, really changes a lot of things in interesting ways.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a bit like the Dollar Shave Club, isn't it? I mean, that came from nowhere. The branding
right.
was amazing. They and then they got sold for like a ridiculous amount of money. For
$1 billion to the shave to Gillette. Yeah.
Yeah. For a business that just came from nowhere. Thanks. I have $1 billion. Like, but the thing is that all it's going to take is an application on an iPhone or an Android phone, which means you can do your own eye test at home.
You know,
you do your own eye test, okay, you sit there, and literally you're going to be able to create the images of what you look like in different clothes, with different haircuts, with different glass frames, or contact lenses. Oh, what do I look like with blue contact? You know, and it's going to become, I think that is right. I don't like the word disruption, but that's in essence what's happening. It's what's been happening forever. I mean, what I like about IBM is that they are quite a very old company. Actually, I was talking to Winston Churchill's grandson the other day.
Mm.
He's the founder of American Angel, which is a angel investment firm. He's worked with over 1,000 startups, and I was quite impressed. We were sort of talking a bit about that, and it's just so interesting how these businesses can just come from nowhere. And I think IBM is the only one, really, that I know of that's actually still around from that era. I mean, it's pretty old compared to, if you look at all the top companies, most of them are new, right? Like not even 20 years old.
Right, right. Yeah, there's always... as we move from every generation of computing, there's always going to be maybe a few that survive into the next generation, and then a lot that don't make it. So yeah, IBM has survived through the mainframe era. They essentially created the computing market. They survived through the PC era. They're now trying to reinvent themselves through the cloud computing era. And as we get into things like artificial intelligence and Internet of Things and all the things that are going to become super data intensive, it makes sense as to why they would go out and acquire, companies like the Weather Channel, who have, number one, massive amounts of data. But you think about things like weather impacts so many things that aren't just, hey, do I take an umbrella to work? It impacts supply chains. It impacts all sorts of stuff that companies have to plan for. So having that information, being able to say, hey, could we monetize it in ways that don't just look like you turn on your weather for the day and see what the forecast looks like? Can I help somebody forecast what they should buy if I'm the home supply store or something else? You get yourself into lots of different businesses. And again, it's really about the importance of thinking not just about your business, but like your supply chains, your value chains, your partners. How can you help them or potentially monetize those interactions?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. It's quite an exciting prospect, really. I mean, I've been involved with the CDO Summit for the past few years. Kind of helped with the social marketing there in 2014 in London. And David Matheson is a lovely gentleman. And, you know, back then in 2014, I listened to what the New York government was doing. And let's just give you a scenario. You go to the New York government and you say to them, I want to open a store in New York. Okay? And this blew my mind. It still blows my mind if you think it's 5 years ago nearly now. And the government then say to you, right, so what business are you in? Okay, I'm gonna open a coffee shop. Okay. So what they do is they actually analyze all of the footfall in the entire New York metropolitan area, the demographics of the people that are gonna be passing past the front of your store, the empty shops, yeah. The proximity to public transport links, bars, other coffee shops, etc. Right? And then they say, this is the best location for you, and it's up for rent. It's however much money per month.
Right. Yeah, no, it's one of these things where, again, I think that's a great example of saying, you know, thinking of yourself as a one function organization. So you know, the government maybe is in the business of making laws and maybe trying to, you know, maintain certain order in society. They're saying, look, you know, we also have a responsibility to collect taxes, to help build schools. And one of the ways they're going to do that is to make business thrive. And to do that is, like you said, you've got to not just give somebody a license as to put up a coffee shop, but there's a lot of value that you know about your city that you ought to be able to provide. Help that business find the best place to be. Hopefully that's going to help their business succeed. That's going to drive tax revenue. It's going to help the city. I mean, it's a huge cycle that you want to be part of and figure out where you can provide value. And the value a lot of times always centers around the data that you have and the ability to collect data and analyze data.
That's the core of digitalization, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So in terms of digital transformation, there are a number of different businesses in the world. There are, you know, there are small businesses, there are medium sized, there are large businesses.
Right.
Each one of those is at a different stage of digitalization. Mm-hmm. So where do you start with digital transformation?
Well, I think the key when you think about digital transformation, you know, start with one assumption, which is, like you said, we're going to focus on digitizing the business. Right. But the second thing typically is you have to realize that the transformation part of it, while there's a technology aspect, and there are lots of people who can help you with the technology, the bigger part of it typically is the people that are involved. And this is typically the hardest part. So essentially what you have to come to realize is there's probably a part of your business that their job is to say, hey, we're going to come up with new innovative things. It could be business development, sales, whatever that function is. We're going to come up with new innovative things. Well, their job is go fast, create new things, have innovative ideas. Well, there's also going to be other parts of your current business whose job is to create stability, right? They're the group that manages security for your business or they make sure that the website is always running 24/7. And what happens there is as you're trying to digitize things, as you're trying to move faster in the markets and trying to react to the market differently, you create this inherent internal tension between the people that want to go fast and change things, and the people who are incentivized to not change things, to keep things stable, to keep things secure. And so the first thing to really realize is that you're going to have to figure out a way to overcome that tension, because you want the benefits of moving faster, of collecting more data, of making decisions on that data, and doing it in a way that doesn't create undue risk on your business or create so much change that nobody can understand it. So that's always the first thing that people kind of have to mentally grasp. And it's really important that gets looked at from the executive level, because the executives have to be supportive of the idea that, hey, this digitization, digital transformation is important for our business. It's going to make us survive in the long run. So sort of top-down encouraging of that. But also, there's got to be some retraining and some educating at the ground level of the business, the people doing the work, to say, hey, look, we're going to change something. We're going to support you in how this change is going to happen. It's going to feel different. We're going to measure things different in the business. But kind of understanding that inherent tension of some things have to go faster and some things still want to remain the same, that's always the biggest challenge and typically the best starting point in terms of how are we going to go make this happen.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are very scared about losing their jobs.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have become complacent as well in their jobs,
sure,
their careers, and their businesses. And that complacency, unfortunately, guys, anyone listening to this, that is going to cause either, mass loss of jobs, or it means you need to take action and learn something new. And you know what? I would prefer to take action and learn something new. And that's my personal attitude about it. But over and above this, yeah, businesses have their own pressures from shareholders and everything else. However, there needs to have some sort of corporate social responsibility, which ensures that there is not a mass panic within that business that says, well, look, we just want to help you make your job easier. We want to make your job better for you, and we're going to help you make that job better. And yes, we're going to streamline as best as we can, but we will ensure that there are plenty of jobs. Because I mean, that's the other fear, that there aren't going to be any people working, it's just going to be robots, like with the Hitachi warehouse manager in 2015, to manage a warehouse of humans, which is quite an interesting one.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there are obviously some examples that are starting to come up where we see automation take the place of what were human jobs at some point. What we find more and more in the sort of computer side of technology is that, number one, I always tell people, if you've been in the technology industry, the sort of computer side of the technology industry for any period of time, the only constant that's existed is change, right? You're used to change. You're used to having to learn something new on a fairly regular basis. It may be once every year or once every couple of years. But, fearing change and being on the computer side of technology are kind of oil and water. You sort of come to accept it. And the reality is, in most cases, the business isn't saying we would benefit from losing all of your experience or losing having people to do these things. What they're really saying is, we just want to do things in different ways. And we're looking for, the ability to be adaptable. And so it says, number one, I'm not really asking you to do anything radically different than we've done before. I'm asking you to continue to learn, continue to change, and so that should help part of the, hey, we're going to evolve. And the second part of it is, you're kind of asking your workers to make some commitment to the business, because the business is essentially saying, we would like to continue to survive, we'd like to continue to be successful, and we want you to be part of doing it. And if you've built a culture in the company where people enjoy working there, they want to see the company be successful, they become successful, the company becomes successful. This is really doubling down on a commitment between the company itself and the workers themselves to say, hey, we want to be successful. We want you to be part of that. In most cases, when you present it that way, you find there's a lot of buy-in from people. There's less pushback than there is buy-in to want to make things successful, want to learn new things and be part of the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the people who, in essence, will lose their jobs or their jobs will change dramatically are the ones that need to be looking anyway, really. Because that experience is valuable. And, you know, all these people sort of causing a mass panic about AI, everything else. And actually, you know, I mean, I was talking to Dr. Churchill, and he sort of said, you know, we're not going to be living in the age of the Jetsons anytime soon. And that did make me smile, actually, because that's what people in technology, you know, like everyone to believe, that actually, oh, well, we're going to just use AI. There's this mass overhyping of AI. What it can actually do, and I think that someone needs to put their hand up and say, you know what? Okay, so we can do these things with AI, but AI is not connected. Yeah, that AI is used in very specific ways, and it is not going to create some kind of, you know, ganja fueled hallucination grandeur like Elon Musk. Saying that it's going to kill everyone and, you know, everything else. I mean, that's that's my attitude around it. What's your view on that one, Brian?
Yeah, I think the thing with AI and machine learning, you know, people have to remember that this isn't a new phenomenon. This is, you know, science and mathematics that's existed for, you know, 20, 30 years. And so, you know, there's always a certain amount of science fiction that goes on to, hey, if it's something gets taken to its furthest reaches, you know, here's what it could look like. And we've seen science fiction movies about that, and books have been written and so forth. But the real reality is that, you know, with AI, with machine learning, it's now such an everyday part of our lives that we sort of forget that the small progresses that it makes, you know, sort of unlock some things. So, for example, if you've ever gone to Google, you know, way back in the day, if you went back 10 years in Google, you know, Google didn't do things like complete your search, right? You start typing in a couple of words and it fills in a bunch of stuff for you. You know, that didn't used to happen, right? Now those things start to happen. Well, nobody says, oh my gosh, my search is using AI and ML. And it's like people go, oh, that's a nice convenience, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Jetsons 30, 40 years ago used to talk about flying cars. Well, you know, now we have vehicles, you know, most modern vehicles these days have a bunch of things built into them that do pretty interesting stuff that are helping you drive better. You know, they let you know when you've gone outside the lane. They'll do some things to sense the car in front of you and potentially stop if you're not stopping in time. Well, that's essentially a variation on what machine learning and AI is, but they've just become a part of your everyday thing, and you look at them and you go, oh, those are great. They kept me safe. They help me avoid an accident. And so I think there are always going to be scary scenarios that people will apply to science if it goes radically wrong. You know, every superhero movie is always based on that, the Hulk or Spider-Man or something. But I think what we see more and more is that the small advances, the day-to-day advances that happen, people tend to like the benefits of them. And the ones that are, you know, strange and weird and radical kind of get kicked out by the market, rejected by the market. The things that are useful and helpful and become part of our day-to-day lives, people appreciate that. It ends up unlocking some time that they can do with other things. So I'm less fearful about it. I understand the concern and the fear, and I'm sure, you know, things can go wrong. But you know, I think the market has a way of sort of accepting the things that are useful for you know, broad piece of society and rejecting the ones that seem to cause a lot of harm.
Yeah, I agree. So what exciting digital transformation project have you been involved with, Ron?
You know, the good thing about it is there's so many of them, and it's like a little bit like the AI example I have. You know, things happen, and they may seem small at the time, but they begin to sort of blossom. So I'll give you a couple of simple examples. You know, I grew up in Detroit, which for your listeners, they may or may not know, Detroit was sort of the capital where automobiles were originally, you know, kind of become mass produced, Ford and the assembly line and so forth. So you know, I grew up in Detroit, and the thing that you always focused on with automobiles was horsepower and styling of the outside of the car and all those types of things. Very machine centric. And nowadays, when you think about automobiles, all of the automakers are really focused on, you know, what's the inside experience? Can I deliver software to the vehicle so that it gets new features? It doesn't just stop when it rolls off the lot from the lot of the vehicle. It's now thinking about, you know, can I update maps in the car? Can I update better driving? And so, you know, we've worked with some companies, some of the automotive companies that are really focused on how do we deliver software to those automobiles on a consistent basis. You know, how do we focus people's experience so that the kids in the back seat can get Wi-Fi or you can personalize your music experience? Like, that's a huge transformation for the automotive industry. Less about the engine itself and more about the experience in the car. We work with a company who is one of the major hotel companies, and one of their focuses was, they said, you know, everybody comes through our front door, everybody deals with the front desk, but everybody gets the exact same experience. And the reality is, somebody coming in with kids on a vacation is totally different than the person who's a business traveler, a road warrior, and rolls in at 11 o'clock at night. And so they said, you know, the first thing that we could do, the simplest thing we could do, is give them a key. Let them get the key without having to check in at the front desk at 11 o'clock at night when they're tired. They just want to show up. And so we help them with a digital key program. And as simple as that sounds, you go, oh, that really starts to, you know, unlock a lot of things. Right. One, it maybe helps the hotel itself rethink the front desk experience. It rethinks that whole real estate that they have at the front desk. What else can we do to that? But number two, it personalizes the experience for that person. It could be, I rolled in late at night, and I want to let them know, hey, please put some water in my room, or please put a warm cookie in my room. I don't have to deal with the front desk person if I'm tired, if I'm grumpy. So sometimes they're big things, like the automotive example. Other times they're what seem like little small things, but they have sort of nice benefits, because that road warrior, you go, I'm going to go back to that hotel if I get a chance. I'm always going to pick that one because they make my check-in experience better. And so you're always thinking about what can we do to make the customer experience better, to make the loyalty experience better, and then what can we learn from that? And obviously, there's a bunch of technology that makes all that happen. But again, there's so many examples out there. You know, it's really sort of fascinating.
That's really interesting about the front desk check-in. I like that a lot, actually, because it's so necessary to reinvent everything, because people are different. Like, people are so different. Like you say, like having a family versus a business traveler, are completely different, or a newlywed, or, you know, totally, totally different. So,
right.
What's the most exciting for you out of all the projects that you've been involved with?
Oh, wow. You know, I think the thing that you love the most is when you get a chance to work with some companies and they start to realize, like, oh, okay, number one, we conquered some new technology. Like, that's always fun. It gives them a lot of satisfaction that, you know, something they were maybe afraid of or didn't know anything about, or they were excited about. But more importantly, it is pretty crazy when, you know, after working with somebody for 6 months or a year or something, they go, this is going to totally change our business. It totally unlocks our ability to get into new markets and new things. You know, like, I treat it a little bit like my kids. Like, you don't love one kid more than the other, and you don't want to say that one's more than the other. But it's amazing. To me, what's really interesting is to watch these companies kind of start to get creative, right? It's, for me, I work with a lot of technologists and computer people, and you think, well, they're only focused on the computers and the blinky lights and kind of the low-level stuff. And what happens is when you unlock and you start to talk to them and you go, hey, you have the ability. You know, you've never really been the front of the business, but you have the ability to impact the future of the business. Their creative juices get going, and they get so excited about it. And, you know, I'll give you one more example. This is sort of, you know, again, sort of in the travel space, but not coincidentally. You know, we work with one of the airports in Europe, and they set this really big goal. They said, we want to be the best airport in Europe. And we said, okay, that's great. And they said, we want to do that by 2021, a super short time frame. And they really started thinking about, you know, everything about the experience of going to the airport, everything from, you know, how do I get my tickets? Do I make that simple for people? How do we notify them about things that are going on? Like the weather change, are there delays in traffic, has the flight been delayed? Everything about, they're trying to think about every bit of the experience, how they can digitize it. How do they put signage in the airport so that, you know, it's in multiple languages, or, you know, to figure out the flow of traffic? You start to think about all that and you're like, this is really amazing. This is sort of watching businesses reinvent themselves somewhat in real time, and the fact that they, you know, they no longer have to think about just the resources that they have. But they think about, how do I interact with weather? Oh, I'm gonna go to the Weather Channel. Oh, how do I interact with social media? Oh, there's a whole bunch of tweets about some, you know, traffic thing, or there's tweets about, you know, some crazy incident. Like, how do we collect all that and then make better experiences? That part is really fun, because you're no longer talking about technology anymore. You're talking about, you know, really reshaping these company businesses, and they want to think about the next 20 years for themselves. That's very cool.
Yeah, I share your excitement. I think seeing other people get excited about what they're doing,
yeah,
when you sort of share the excitement. I mean, you're already excited because you're already involved with it, you know, but for them discovering it and then actually, you know, having that sort of helping hand must just be very, very rewarding. No doubt about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, on digital transformation, do you start sort of just by like an order? Like, say I had a business that you know, and I came to you and I said, hey Brian, can you help me? I need to, you know, really transform digitally. I wanna become, you know, the most digitalized business in my space. Yeah. Where do you start? Do you start with an audit and then list opportunities from there?
So I think the reality is there's usually two places people start, and one I've found works pretty well, and one tends to lag. So usually the companies or the businesses that start with a problem, so they have an urgency in the business somewhere. You know, maybe it's as simple as, hey, you know, business has been slow, we have to increase profitability. Okay, that's fine. That's typically kind of a normal thing in the business. But usually when there's something that's a little more critical in the business, maybe they had a major outage, you know, that impacted their business. They ended up on the front page of the newspaper, or you know, they lost something. Usually when there's a criticality that starts the process, that tends to work itself better. And the reason for that is, number one, urgency sort of focuses people. But number two, it gives them a distinct area to sort of work on, and it really forces them to say, okay, how did we get ourselves in this situation? And, you know, do we just want to get ourselves back to sort of normalcy, or do we use this as an excuse to really rethink what we did? And the reason I use that example is, you know, you can apply this to sort of your regular life. You know, if you wake up on January 1st and you say, well, my New Year's resolution is I'd like to lose 10 pounds. Okay, you could do that any year of your life for any reason, and you just sort of said you want to do that. But if you went to the doctor and the doctor said, well, your cholesterol level is over 300, well, now you've got a critical reason to go. I better lose those 10 pounds. I better figure out the best way to change my diet. I better figure out, because now I've got an urgency. And so that the urgency-driven starting point tends to work better. It's easier to drive funding around those projects. It's easier to drive people being concerned about it. The ones where you just start with an audit and say, hey, you know, all my other competitors say they're doing digital transformation, those work. You know, there's success that happens with them. They don't tend to change nearly as fast, because there isn't an urgency. It's harder to get funding to keep the things you're doing the day in and day out work. So I always typically ask people, you know, what's the most critical thing happening right now, or what's the thing that worries you the most, as opposed to just saying, hey, we're changing for normal 10% efficiency.
Pain is a great motivator.
Yeah. Yeah. The normal human function that we all understand.
Yeah.
Pain and urgency.
Yeah. And then from there,
yeah,
you know, they've said, well, we've got this massive problem. We've had a data breach.
Right.
We've had a data breach, and you know, we've really got serious problems. How do we manage our data? And how do we take this so that no one can get into our system again? Right. Then you put together a plan and then ask them what else they may need, and then sort of get with the urgent stuff first, and then progress to the more nice to have items at the end, right?
Yeah, and I think there's really, you have to think in terms of two sort of immediate paths, right? The first one is going to be, again, think of these in parallel. The first one is, so you had this breach, you want to go to the executive level of the company and make sure they understand the criticality of it, but also make sure that they're going to get behind the things that the project needs to do successfully. So are they going to help get it funded? Are they going to help make sure that they're providing air cover in terms of schedules and making sure that people realize how important this is to fix? So there's a top-down aspect of it. But typically what ends up happening is, in parallel, you can go to the teams that are responsible for things and be like, hey, you know, not just, you know, do you know why this happened? Or, you know, but in a lot of cases, they've already been researching, you know, what other technologies could be used to make this better? What best practices do you wish we could have been using, but we just didn't have time to do it? So in parallel, you're kind of going to from the bottom up and saying, what do you guys think would help make this better? Because they live with it every day. They typically know what would have been better. And it also allows them to say, hey, what restrictions or what changes can we make at the, you know, at the work level? Really finding that balance between sort of executive top-down buy-in, air cover, support, and then encouragement and the knowledge from the base in terms of bottom-up. We've got to find a way to work both of those in parallel. Yes, a plan falls out of it and so forth, but those two things are really, really important. If you just do one versus the other, you either get lots of ideas with no support or lots of expectations with no ability to execute.
Yeah, I can see that because it can be really demotivational. Someone at the top of the business turns around and says, we're doing this. And then they come to your department and say, we're doing this. And you're like, well, I don't want that. We don't need that.
Right. You know, you don't understand it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, we know that that's not the right solution. And
right.
Picking the right solution is certainly got to be key.
Yeah.
But I think the future is bright. I think that a lot of companies are going through this right now. I mean, I was sort of looking at some stats the other day, and I think it was like 34% of businesses are like well into digitalization. The you know, completely transforming. But I mean, I think there are a lot of sort of outside factors that are coming in, you know, like GDPR, for example,
sure.
Here. And then you guys have got like the California thing that happened over there.
It's
pretty serious in terms of like government legislation and that sort of stuff. But I think, you know, starting off with a kind of, I hate to say it, but like the old school methods, SWOT analysis, still have value.
They do. I think what you end up finding is that the long-term planning processes that a lot of companies used to do, they'd have a 5-year and 10-year forecast or roadmap or plan. That model is really getting broken down. So you still want to understand the SWOT analysis and the 4-box quadrants and all those sort of things you might learn in business school. But you very much have to be able to say, we're going to do iterative planning. We're not doing sort of waterfall planning. We start and plan and plan and plan and plan, and then we get to the end. And it's 18 months later, and we're like, oh wait, all of our assumptions are no longer valid. The market changed. Like, you've got to have things in place that say our planning is going to be iterative. We're going to collect feedback as we go along. We're going to course correct as we go along. There's a model out there. People think it's called OODA. Observe, we call it OODA loops. And they're things that the military use all the time, because in military environments, you know, you have a plan, you have a battle plan, you know where your enemy is, but the enemy moves around, the environments change, the weather changes, the munitions change, how much food you have changes. And so there are things that we're learning from other ecosystems that become applicable to business, you know, in environments that are going to change.
Yeah. I mean, I think coming up with, you know, where you want to be, like having that big goal, you know, like,
right.
Wimbledon did. Like, they said, well, we want to be the best tennis tournament in the world. And
right.
They've done it, you know, and they are doing it. They've put digital transformation at the absolute core of what they're doing, even so far as, you know, taking over the broadcast and saying, well, we're in control of it now. And if you want it with us, then you need to pay us. And that's what they did with the BBC.
Right. Yeah, they changed their supply chain.
Exactly. And then they reversed the power. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. But, you know, keeping ethics at the core is so, so important. And that's what I like about Wimbledon. I mean, they've kept the relationship with the BBC. They've designed the way that they release updates so that it actually benefits the BBC instead of hurting them, which I think goes to, you know, core ethics of a business. And I like that. I think that there are so many interesting, exciting things going on right now. But we all need to remember that if we lose the consumerization, then all of this technology and everything is going to leave us like the Flintstones anyway.
Oh, yeah. Ethics and working well with your partners and creating, you know, like Stephen Covey says, you know, win-win situations is always going to be good for your business. There's going to be some change along the way and want to educate them. But yeah, if you're creating situations that are win-wins, that you want to create bigger opportunities than exist today, those are always great starting points for, you know, working with people and trying to make things better.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Brian. You've been really generous with your time, and we've got 30 seconds left. So is the best place for people to find you on LinkedIn, do you think?
Yeah, LinkedIn's great. You know, Brian Gracely on LinkedIn, at B Gracely on Twitter. I'm online a lot. And any of those places, would love to talk to folks. And my direct messages are always open. So love to talk to you about this.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to speaking to you soon, buddy.
Thank you, Nathaniel. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections.